All right. It's booty day, and we'll get there in a moment. Brian Kamenetsky and Ramona Shelburne filling in for George Sedano, ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests on the Sedano Show appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Cover all your bases with Straight Talk Wireless. Get the same networks as big carriers, but only pay up to pay up to 50% less. Get the unlimited plan with 25 gigs of high-speed data, then 2G for just $45 a month, only at Walmart. Savings may vary. See terms and conditions at straighttalk.com. Morning, Momo. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. You know who's doing better than both of us, though?
Who that?
Laura Romo-Rolopez, because it's her birthday.
Okay, do you know what that sounded like, Brian? Laura Romo-Rolopez's birthday!
Because like, it's her what? Birthday. I'm trying to
you
get excited.
You said that so just fast.
Just because you don't care it's Laura's birthday, I'm excited.
You have to say
I'm
it.
I'm excited
like,
for Laura.
You, here, let me try that again. Laura
right.
Romo
I don't have a.
Lopez.
I haven't
it's your birthday! There
well,
you
that's
go.
No better.
No, I actually like articulated
like it was like, you know,
the sounds of her name
right,
so
but
you could
was
hear
so
them.
It was so slow, there was no enthusiasm.
Laura, it's your birthday!
Thank you, Momo.
Like
you sounded excited.
Yeah.
By the way, I love that Laura
like
is playing happy birthday for herself.
I'm not.
For herself. Exactly.
I did it. The board up for the morning show put that in. So
there you go.
Not me, Greg. Thank you for trying to throw me under the
but
bus on my birthday.
She's controlling
happy birthday,
her own
Laura.
Thank you.
You know, I understand what Ramona was trying to do, but she sounded like when she said Laura Romo Lopez, she sounded like you were dialing one at the pharmacy. You know, like for Laura Romo Lopez, that's one. Like that's what that sounded like.
And why the government name?
I know why do we
because that's what's on
life.
The thing.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks, Greg. Government name. Couldn't just a little bit.
You want Romo? Laura Romo.
Thank you.
Government name.
It's like when you're in trouble with your family and they use your whole name.
Yeah, there you go.
You know what you did.
Well, Laura, it's interesting. I think there's a quarantine birthday protocol that people have adopted. So it's like people drive by your house and honk or something. Is that what you're going to do? Or are you going to do the Zoom call with your friends? Because you can't really go and have a party, right?
Yeah, no, I'm not doing the Zoom thing, even though it was suggested by a few people. I was like, that's not me. I don't know. I just can't do that.
Yeah.
The drive thing, I'm old, man. So
I know.
My friends ain't going to do that. I think that's more for younger kids. And I think they love it. Like, I've
gas
seen it
money,
on social media.
Gas money.
Gas money. Shut up. But yeah, I don't think I'm doing that. I'm definitely going out
no,
for
that
drinks.
Is it's not true, though. We actually outside. You have to be outside to have your drinks now. But that's okay. It's California. Yeah. My wife did a drive-by birthday for her friends. And I'm pretty sure we're all older than you. So it's not just for the young people. Like the really young people. Like
yeah, I'm not
children.
A big fan of the drive-by birthdays. Like I live in a cul-de-sac. So one of the neighbors had a kid who had a birthday. And it was like, I don't know. It was just like 30 cars just like sitting in our cul-de-sac honking their horns for like an hour. It was like, okay, can we wrap this up? I mean,
so I assume Ramona, you marched over there in the middle of a pandemic in this one moment where this small child has even a glimmer of happiness and you told him to knock it off.
Yeah, kind of. Like we were all like, I mean, it was really early on in the pandemic. It was really early. Like I want to say it was the first week of it when we were all home and like, really nervous about the, you know, the virus and stuff. And we all still obviously are, but like, you know, everybody's a little bit more chill. And so it was just like, it's just really a lot of people and it's a cul-de-sac. So it's like, there's nowhere to go. And they just kind of sat there and like, were just being loud and shouting from their cars for a while. And I was like, all right.
Did you think like coronavirus was going to waft into your house?
Yes. I was like, this is like congregating too many people congregating. Move along, people. Happy birthday to you, sir. But, you know, let's go.
It actually, what Ramona is talking about here is a great seg because Ramona surely called, like, you know, the county of Los Angeles to snitch on the young person's birthday party that was going on across the street. Shams reported yesterday that the NBA's snitch line, Ramona, is up and it's available and it is apparently being used.
The question is, who is using it? Like, Is it people within the bubble who are seeing things? Is it people outside the bubble who are seeing people? That's the big question. I don't know. I've heard sort of anecdotally about a lot of very minor infractions where people are, they're not wearing their masks when they should be. And they kind of, oh, you're sitting too close when you're playing Uno. I mean, there was that picture that kind of got out there and they weren't wearing masks and they were definitely not 6 feet away. I think they've gotten sort of a lot of minor warnings going on. But the snitch line, that's the next level. And like, that's the one that I think has the most potential for abuse, right? Like, I mean,
that's my question. Because when you call the snitch line for the people who are playing Uno mm-hmm. next to each other, are you really doing it to try to get guys in trouble, or are you just doing it for fun?
Yeah, it's fun that is to the call the snitch line, right?
and say the words, guys are playing Uno too close together. Like, that's a fun sentence to say when you're narking on your friends.
Yeah.
Because it's so silly sounding.
Yeah, especially at this stage where, I mean, there's just like a lot of different, there's a lot of different rules and things that you have to be paying attention to. Like, I see a lot of people outdoors right. fishing and, you know, hanging out, and they're definitely not 6 feet away or wearing your mask. So, like, you know, a lot of this, if you follow NBA bubble life, it's just all over the place, right? Like, you just see the photos and I'm like, is that illegal? Is that, you know, is that okay? I think what we've sort of heard is just like a lot of minor infractions. The big question is, are there major ones too? Like, you know, while somebody's quarantining, you're really not even supposed to like go down the hall to get some ice. Like, you're not supposed to, you know, go into somebody else's
Tell that to
room.
Bruno Caboclo.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's the big issue. And there's also a lot of other smaller issues. You know, if you remember the other day, Danny Green was held out of practice because there was an issue with his test. And then his right. quote about it was, yeah, I don't think they got a good enough swab in there. It seemed like they went a little too quickly and they didn't get enough samples. So it wasn't so much like he tested positive or anything. It was just like they didn't get a good result. So I think there's just like a lot of issues being worked out like that. And I know Malik Andrews, who's our reporter in the bubble, she just reported on the league memo that got sent out, basically saying there are some issues with the testing, or you know, there's concerns among teams over a potential for false positives impacting
right, that's
players
an interesting
returning.
One.
And I've sort of heard some stuff too that like, the test that they're being given is the oral swab. It's, you know, have you been to a drive-through testing site yet? Have you done the oral
no,
swab?
No, I've been through a drive-through.
Yeah, okay. So not
to,
the same thing.
I went to Chick-fil-A yesterday. So good.
Not the same thing, Brian. but they...
then the why oral, did they stick that thing up my nose?
You would definitely have to ask them.
I went to the wrong Chick-fil-A.
Yeah. If you go to the drive-through testing sites, like I went last week just to, as you know, let's go get tested. We should just be sure of things. And I sat in line for like an hour and a half. It took forever. It was the first Tuesday after July 4th weekend, which was probably an error on my part by picking that day to go. But you sit in line forever. You finally get there. They have like they hand you a test kit, and they hand it to you with like the, you know, the long tong things that they reach through. So you're not even really close to anybody as you get it. Then you administer the test yourself. So they give it to you and they say, cough 3 times into your mask and then pull your mask down, swab your cheek, swab all over your mouth, and then put the little Q-tip thing back in the vial. Okay, sounds good, but I'm sure that not everybody does that correctly. Like, when you go through and you're doing it, you're swabbing yourself. And I've heard that there's a lot more potential for false positives, false negatives on the oral swab than there is on the Quest Labs test, which is the nasal one that's like sticking the Q-tip up to your brain. And that one is much more reliable. But it also takes 5 days
takes
to get an answer.
Takes a lot longer. Exactly.
Yeah, it takes a lot longer, and they need answers right now. So let's put it this way. The testing's not perfect. There's some issues where, like, let's say somebody has a false positive on one of the tests. And, like, you know, I don't want to report this because it's not reported out or sourced well right now. But I think there's some speculation that the oral test that people get. There's just certain people who test positive. Just there's something in their DNA that doesn't go well, or something. It doesn't that maybe it seems like they have it when they don't. The NBA has a whole protocol. Like if you test positive, you get a second test to confirm it. And while you're getting that second test, you have to go to like an isolation house, and it could take a few days and blah, 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 blah. It's all fine right now when they're just practicing, but when the games start, that could be pretty severe.
Right. And some of this gets to, like, is there any concern at this point? Because one of the things, and we talked about this yesterday, there's still so much that we kind of don't know. A lot of it is in the context of long-term effects. Like, what does it mean if you get it, and, you know, the effect on your lungs, on your kidneys, on all these different, you know, body parts that are really important to professional athletes. Is there any concern at this point that somebody who tested positive before, Nikola Jokic, has gone through coronavirus, he's had it and theoretically rejoins the Nuggets and is okay. If he tests positive, maybe it's dead virus. Is there any concern that an athlete like that could still be contagious?
Yeah, there's definitely concern because, you know, a lot of people who've had this disease say it lingers a long time. Like I know specifically a colleague of mine who had it, and he said that, you know, for a month later he would still feel a little tightness in his chest. Like he's recovered, he tests negative, doesn't seem to be contagious, and then all of a sudden he'll feel some chest tightness. It's like, what's that about? Is that virus still there? I mean, did it affect his lungs? Like, what? It's a strange phenomenon, but I don't think they have good answers for it yet. And I think there is definitely some concern that, you know, people even after 14 days of being asymptomatic or hardly symptomatic, that you could still have some traces of the virus.
Well, that's disconcerting.
Yeah.
So wait, what is when the NBA, like what happens on game day? This is the part that in all of these sports that confuses me. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's the Dodgers and they're in, you know, Houston or whatever it might be, you're on the road, or, you know, in this case, you're inside the bubble and it's, you know, you get tested before your game and you test positive. You've been around the rest of your team.
Mm-hmm.
They're testing negative, but in theory, you know, maybe if you test positive and they just haven't had a chance to test positive yet, like what is the league going to do for the game that happens that day?
Yeah. And I think it's a real concern because if you have players like in and out of the lineups all the time, or if you have people who are held up because they didn't get a good enough swab that day, they have to sit out, and they're playing every other day. As you know, like once the game starts, we're on all the time. So I don't think they have a great answer for that yet. And I think that's another one of the reasons why it was good that they went there early, because the first few weeks, whether, you know, they're going to have some issues. They're trying to iron them out. And the first few weeks, at least you have time now. At least it's not like, you know, there was a boxer named Michaela Mayer. She had a fight. She went to Vegas. She tested positive. They had to cancel the fight the day before. And then she's like, but I'm asymptomatic. I don't know how I would have gotten this. They tested her again, and she was negative. So it was clearly a false positive result. And it was too late. They'd already canceled the fight. It already happened.
Right.
It's too bad, so sad, right?
But at least you can say false positives. If you have to pick one or the other, false positive is better than false negative.
Yeah, that's true. False positive, you know, like, and I think those are much more rare to be a false positive. There's a lot of false negatives, and that was, you know, one of the issues that they had to like go through a lot as they were organizing this bubble. It's like nobody wanted to do the nasal swab every day, but that tends to be the better test. And, you know, I don't know if they'll have to eventually go to that, if they can just keep refining the other test. But that's kind of where we are.
Oh God. All right. Well, we have a lot more on the,
what's an uh-oh and an oh God.
Because it's like, I don't like things that make this sound really complicated.
I know.
Like they're not going to work because as bad as things are, like in Florida, I mean, you know, in theory, these guys are in a place that is safe and sheltered and, you know, where they're being taken care of in a way that allows them to play safely. And I think at this point, like the, you know, people have gotten geared up for basketball. There's been a lot put into this, and it's awkward and weird and sometimes uncomfortable to sit here and talk about it, but I still want to watch basketball, whatever that says about me. So we'll get back to the snitch line here. I have a lot of questions about the snitch line. We've got some interesting stuff from Chris Haynes at Yahoo about LeBron and whether or not he's receiving some special treatment or isn't receiving special treatment down in the Orlando bubble. But before we do that, Ramona, you know all about 30 for 30 podcasts. And
what if I told you?
Right. You're so good at that. The newest one coming out is called Heavy Medals, M-E-D-A-L-S. It's all about the Caroli gymnastics empire. And if you think, you know, the world of professional sports is sometimes crazy, the world of gymnastics is downright insane. And Alyssa Ronick is going to come and join us next and talk about that podcast and what this world is. It is fascinating and stuff that people really need to know about. We'll do that next. ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. Quoting home insurance just got easier with Progressive's Home Quote Explorer. Quote and buy all online at progressive.com. It's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And to do that, I probably should have asked this first. Is Alyssa there? Okay. I jumped the gun on that, Ramona. I'm sorry. How are you, Ramona? It's time for Straight Talk.
I'm good. Let's find out how Ramona's calling Alyssa?
How was your sandwich? Yeah, how was your sandwich? Let's get some Straight Talk about Ramona's sandwich.
Well, okay, I got literally 3 bites in because that was not a long commercial break. So I kind of had like a bit of bite of sandwich in my mouth as we started coming back with the rejoin, and I was trying to chew it very quietly because it's like nothing you can do at that point.
No, you're committed.
Like, oh, here comes the music. I better just chew that really quietly. Good thing there was no lettuce on it. It's good.
Oh yeah, what kind of sandwich?
Yeah. It is a turkey wrap. It was just basically turkey in a whole wheat wrap. I'm trying to be healthy these days. But the key to eating healthy is not eating healthy. It's not having any dinner. it's just like you just eat it early and don't eat after 8 p.m. and then you'll be fine.
So wait, it's amazing. You didn't eat dinner last night and your first thing you're eating today is just a piece of turkey wrapped up in a tortilla.
Yeah, No, it's turkey and it's got some tomato and there was some lettuce, but like, okay, it wasn't in that particular bite, so it's okay.
Because I tell you what, Greg, if that's all she was eating, I'm like, what's the point of winning all these awards for 30 for 30 podcasts and this and that if you're still just eating a piece of turkey wrapped up in a tortilla, like sadly at 10:17 in the morning.
Yeah, I'm not a breakfast person, so I just go for like lunch anytime.
I'm really impressive.
Let's get to Alyssa.
I'm more of a lunch gal. Yeah, I know. It is Alyssa. Alyssa Ronick joins us. She is you were the creator of the new 30 for 30 podcast. It's called Heavy Medals. It's all about the Carolis, and people know, like, even people who don't necessarily know a lot about gymnastics, Alyssa, know the Carolis. Like, they know that name, they know that family. What is the story that you guys are telling here? Because the world of gymnastics is absolutely bonkers.
Yeah, you said it. So, you know, there's two sort of angles to answer that question. One is we tell sort of the sweeping story of their 40 plus year involvement in gymnastics and U.S. gymnastics. And then we also went into the project wanting to answer some of the questions that are still unanswered in the wake of all of the Larry Nassar reporting. You know, how did this happen? What role did the Carolis play in enabling him and in, you know, really creating and sustaining the culture that enabled Larry Nassar to abuse for so long?
Well, you know, one of the things, I've listened to the first 3 episodes of the 7-part series, and I like, by the way, that the episodes are like somewhere between 30 and 40 minutes usually, because they're like perfect bite-sized episodes. I don't like when podcasts get longer than that, because then I have to not finish an episode during my workout, right? But the thing that kind of got me early on was they talk about, you know, you guys talk about Bella Caroli and how big a television presence he was, and you know, when you broadcast the Olympics, like people were just looking of ways to feature Bella Caroli because he was this huge bear of a man and he knew how to work the cameras and he knew how to just be the this charismatic figure. And it was almost like he was bigger than the sport. And, you know, I wonder, you know, a lot, not just in about gymnastics, but in any sport, when you have figures that get so big, we don't want the bad things about them to be true, right? We just like him to be the guy yelling, you know, Carrie, you can do it, right? We like to just 100%. See the good parts of it, and we're sort of blind to the bad parts. And like, how did that happen in USA Gymnastics? How did that take over?
You know, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, that gave him cover. That TV mm-hmm. persona gave him cover for everything else, because, you know, the gymnastics fan, especially those who tuned in only for those big meets when he was on TV, and you know, the mm-hmm. media folks we talked to said, you know, this was somewhat by design, but also gymnasts came and went, right? And back then, especially mm-hmm. in the 80s and 90s, it was very rare for a gymnast to be on multiple Olympic teams. Bella Caroli was a constant, so he was the guy you wrapped your coverage around. One of the things that was so incredibly surprising that had never dawned on me is, why do we know every word out of Bella Caroli's mouth during, you know, every meet, the Olympics, nationals? He was mic'd. No other coaches were mic'd. So we had so many gymnasts say to us, you know, a lot of that stuff you hear, you can do it, you know, come on, Carrie. The gymnast couldn't hear him. He was standing on the other side of the arena. That was all for the cameras, right? So a lot of those theatrics also, you know, you hear Kathy Johnson-Clark say in the episode you're referencing in 3 that he was a very different guy in the gym. So the casual fan saw this, you know, this coach who looked like he loved and adored his gymnast, and he was fueling them with this incredible skill for motivation to great feats. And then you didn't want to believe, you know, when something, you know, when Joan Ryan's book pops up in 95 or, you know, Jennifer Say's book in 2008, you sort of went, oh, well, I don't want to believe that. Or, you know, we had parents tell us they just believe, well, he must have changed. Maybe he was like that in the 70s in Romania. Maybe he was like that in the 80s. But look at him on TV. He clearly loves these gymnasts. And so I think that media coverage gave him cover for what was happening behind closed doors.
Talking to Alyssa Roenick, who is part of the 30 for 30 Heavy Metals podcast, which you can find basically anywhere. I love saying this. Anywhere where you get your podcasts, ESPN Pod Centers, ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or all of the reputable podcasting hosts. One of the things that I think is amazing about this is the way that, like, the perception that we had of gymnasts, particularly, you know, I grew up in the 80s and remember, like, Mary Lou Retton was a huge deal. And all these people you go through and it's like they're these little tiny pixie people. And they're girly and they're, you know, they're powerful and they're strong and ever, but they're very, you know, they're girly and it's a very feminine thing. And they're being, you know, kind of cared for by this paternal older man. And then when you start to play it all out and you, whether it's the, so some of the physical abuse, the mental abuse, or as the story goes on, some of the things involving Larry Nassar, how does the sort of the construction that was put around the Carolis and the freedom that they had play into that whole storyline and kind of the evolution of how we think of female athletes and female gymnasts?
It's a really good question. You know, I mean, I think, and that question is one of the reasons that Joan Ryan named her book. We talked to her for the podcast, Little Girls in Pretty Boxes, because when you start to get to know these gymnasts, I don't know that there is a tougher athlete in the world than gymnasts, right? And then you find out not only are they tough and doing incredibly dangerous, difficult skills. They're training without food. They're training on injuries. They're training without sleep. They are, to this day, just some of the most mentally tough athletes in the world. So this idea that, you know, it's then presented as this very sort of delicate feminine. And, you know, so many of the athletes we talked to said, you know, especially in that reign from 2000 to 2015, 16, when Bella and then Marta Caroli really had complete control over the program, you know, they knew how to present themselves. I remember Jordan Weber saying to us, I wish that you all could have heard what was going on in my mind when I look back at those interviews and hear me only saying polite, things and you know, great things about USA Gymnastics and, you know, about how easy it was. And, you know, they sort of bought into the best way to sell the sport is to make it look easy, but then also let people know that, yes, you know, we're working hard, but this, you know, this comes easy to us. This is, you know, we're all delicate flowers. And, you know, in their minds, they're thinking, oh my gosh, this couldn't be further from the truth. But they were really programmed to sell the sport in the way that it was packaged to the casual fan. And now looking back, you realize how harmful that was. And it's been incredibly heartening to see, you know, Simone Biles really broke this mold and now all the gymnasts following her, how much more open they are about, you know, what is really going on. I mean, we have a story on Simone Biles today, and we had multiple people tell us they remember the day Simone Biles tweeted a picture of her eating pizza, because she was the first gymnast at the elite level that anyone could remember tweeting a picture of food. You know, you were sort of told, if you're on social media, you know, if you're a gymnast, when you're in the gym, if you're not in the gym, you're sleeping. So all of your social media needs to reflect that. You know, and here's Simone, you know, with bikini photos and going on vacation, and here's my boyfriend, and I eat pizza like a normal teenager. She started to give permission to her fellow athletes to be normal kids and to let the world know. You know, and then of course she also has spoken out about the struggles she's faced and you know, going to therapy. And so all of those things that she's doing are really starting to change the culture of the sport.
No, I'm looking forward to binging the last four episodes, which I know Simone is a part of those. And I think, you know, when we think about what we would be doing right now had coronavirus not happened, we'd all be in Tokyo, right? Or watching the games in Tokyo.
Yes.
Right now, I got an alert came up on my phone that my flight is a week from yesterday. Oh,
a week from yesterday. I mean, Simone Biles
would have been my flight. Yeah.
Yeah. She would have been the darling of these games, right? She would. And now it's crazy to think about, you know, what we would be doing had this not happened. But is this her speaking up, her posting the picture of pizza, of changing just the way female gymnasts are perceived and what they should be and what they can be? Is that going to be part of her legacy as much as all the gold medals and you know, how much success she's had?
100%, if not more. You know, obviously all the gold medals have elevated her to a place to have the kind of platform she has, so that she has more followers and more people listening to her on social media and when she does interviews. You know, the gold medals lifted her up to this platform, right? But what she is choosing to do with that platform and with her voice is her legacy, 100%. I mean, one of the reasons we were able to put together this story we did today is because every interview we sat down for the Heavy Metals podcast, without prompt, they brought up Simone Biles. And rarely was it to say, you know, she's an incredible gymnast. Of course she is. Everyone knows that. It was to say she's the example that there's another way to win. And she is the person who is proving that the culture is changing. And she is taking it upon herself to, you know, raise her voice and speak out. And people listen. You know, we've seen the power of her tweets, you know, and she tweeted about the ranch. 3 days later, USA Gymnastics closed the ranch. You know, she tweeted about an insensitive post by, you know, one of the interim presidents at USA Gymnastics, and she was gone 3 days later. I mean, she understands that her words have power, and she is, you know, she's using it in a phenomenal way. I can't wait to see what she does next.
It's the newest 30 for 30 podcast, Heavy Metals Inside the Karoly Gymnastics Empire. It's reported out by Alyssa Roenick and Bonnie Ford. Alyssa, thank you so much for coming on, and we're really excited to see and hear the whole thing. ESPN Pod Center, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, that's where you get it.
Thank you, guys. Anything for you, too.
Aw.
Thanks.
Thanks.
That's nice. Thanks, Alyssa. Yeah. Alyssa's in that period where she has back-to-back interviews, where you just say the same things. It's like being on a book tour. Like, you just say the same things over and over and over again. And then you start, like, coming up with these really good riffs. Like, you get certain questions, and then you're like, oh, that was a good one. I'm going to use that again. And it's almost like you're doing a whole nother podcast when you do the radio tour. Because Alyssa is the host of it, and I think she has, like, a good radio voice for it. So she's going to be front and center for the next week or so.
Yeah, it's all the stuff. The ESPN, like whether it's the televised 30 for 30s or the podcast, they're just like the run that this section of content has been on over the last decade or so is really fantastic. So this is going to be a good one. You just got a little taste of it there. But the world of gymnastics and the story of gymnastics in this country is it's bananas. Like the we talk about NFL players, NBA players, and like what they go through to get to the top level. And like there is gymnastics is, you know, or Olympic sports generally, it's even worse because if you don't get to the Olympics, there's no payoff. You've spent your entire childhood, you know, devoted to this one thing and there's no payoff. You don't make it, you know, what do you do next? The amount of injury, the abuse that they put their bodies through to get to this point is insane. Like, It is a seedy world, women's gymnastics, and one that I'm glad people are finally looking at.
Well, I mean, you know, I actually went to Carrie Strug went to Stanford, and at the same time I was there, and I remember she would always be working out in the weight room when we were in there, you know, and it was just it was kind of amazing to see she like after the Olympic glory, after all of that's over, she's Carrie Strug. Right. She's just a typical Stanford student working out in the weight room. And, you know, it was like, it was funny. She was a really nice girl. Like we talked several times. She was, you know, I think she moved back east. Maybe she has a job in Washington or something doing, you know, regular things now. But, it was, she is still always going to be Carrie Strug. Like we have these Olympic moments and they have these huge, they're so huge and they're so, big. It defines like your whole life. And I understand why athletes chase it, why their parents chase it, why you would do just about anything to have that moment. But just having listened to the first three episodes, like it's kind of staggering to me what the gymnast had to go through just to be deemed worthy of that opportunity by the Crowleys. Like what the Crowleys put these young women through is unbelievable.
So give it a listen. Next, though, Ramon, I have a question for you. LeBron James says that he's not getting special treatment inside the bubble.
Okay.
Should he be? We'll do that next.
Brian Kamenetsky
and Momo filling in for Sedano 710 ESPN. ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Ramona.
Yeah.
Chris Haynes, how are you? Chris Haynes had this to say from inside the Orlando bubble about whether or not LeBron James was getting special treatment.
LeBron is switching things up. On the campus, he's doing things a little bit differently. Now, he's not having, I was told, sources told me, he has not brought along his personal chef, his personal masseuse, nor has he brought over his extended security team. He wants to make sure that he's going through all the rigors of his teammates on this campus to make sure he's blending in and going through everything that they're experiencing. And LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Quinn Cook, at times I've seen them roaming the campus, just walking along, just getting a bonding period. But LeBron James was clearly trying to send a message that we're all in this together. And that is one of his forms of trying to show that he's out there with them doing the same thing that they're doing. And he's eating the same exact
Chris
food.
Haynes.
So that's Chris Haynes from Yahoo. One of the few people in the bubble, few reporters in the bubble, is actually allowed out of his room at this point. It's him and Malika, the only two people who can actually walk around. So what he's talking about there is the idea as to whether or not LeBron is getting special treatment. Like there's talk like LeBron's going to have his personal chef. LeBron's going to have his physical therapy guy. Like LeBron's got this whole infrastructure that's built around him. But every team only gets, I believe the number is 37 play. That includes players and Lakers. So 17 of the people the Lakers bring are players. That leaves 20 people, coach, staff, you know, trainers, all that stuff. It's not many. It's really it's a very small group. And LeBron's not getting any of his stuff. He's just like everybody else. My question to you, Ramona, is if it makes LeBron able to play at a higher level and he wanted to bring his personal physical therapy guy, aren't the Lakers better off letting him do it?
I mean, I feel like they are. I mean, sorry if you can hear Daniel screaming in the next room, by the way.
That's fine.
He's fine. He's fine. He's just a toddler. They do that. I think they are. I think they, I think the to be honest, like whatever your superstar needs, you should just get that for him. Like it's, it, you know, if
yes,
if they need like a special chef to, prepare the food that they like, or a masseuse or whatever, like, yes, get them that. Like, I don't know, who of his group of his support team, let's call it, went. I know that some of his support team is like our Laker employees. So I'd be curious to parse Chris's report there, because there's people who are so integral to LeBron's support team that he has them literally on the Lakers payroll. One of his main trainers is Mike Mancias. He's now on the Laker payroll, right? So
right.
Randy Mims, he's a Laker security guard. That's LeBron's personal security guard. And so I know, and like Mike Mancias works with several other players who are on the Lakers who are also clutch clients. So, it's interesting to hear that, because I'm wondering which of the people are in and which are out. I'm sure there's a private chef who's out. I'm sure there's a masseuse who's out, but they definitely have a team masseuse. It's like the same thing with the story of the barbers. You know, there's barbers in the bubble, but like, you know, each player likes to have their own barber, the person they trust to cut their hair, but they can't have that many people in the bubble. So they had to like nope. pick who they were going to have. And there was a fun story last week from, I think it was Eric Woodyard and I'm forgetting who the other reporter on that was, but it was a fun story last week of like, how did they pick the barbers to go into the bubble? And one of them was Rajon Rondo's brother, I think they cut a lot of guys' hair, but like they could only have like three or four guys, and you're just going to have to trust that person to cut your hair. Like you can't just have all of the trappings of wealth. Right.
No, for sure. Like there are certain concessions need to be made. Like LeBron's chef, as much as LeBron, I mean, look, he mm-hmm. spends millions a year on his body. Like the guy knows what this is and he takes it incredibly seriously. When you have to figure out, okay, what are the priorities? Security isn't one. Like LeBron needs security mm-hmm. so he can go from point A to point B. He's not going anywhere. And so I think you can rely on the NBA to provide security mm-hmm. for the bubble. LeBron doesn't need security to go from practice to his hotel because his peers aren't going to bother him. So that's not an issue. You know, the personal chef, if as long as the person the Lakers do bring in, every team can bring in someone to make food for the team. As long as that guy can make what LeBron wants, maybe it doesn't taste exactly the same. Maybe this guy puts a little more basil on it than, he'd rather have a little more oregano, but he's going to be okay. I'm not sure there are 10 people in the Lakers organization who are more important than the guy who's in charge of making sure LeBron's body works the way it's supposed to. You know, from a physical therapy and recovery standpoint, that guy, if I have to choose between that guy and an extra assistant coach, I'm taking LeBron's physical therapist. And I'm not even thinking twice about it, because LeBron can provide you what you need from that assistant coach. If his body isn't right, they're not winning a title. It's just not going to work.
Yeah, and I think that guy is there. His name is Mike Mancias. And
so they brought him.
Yeah, I haven't been told he's not there. I assume he is, because he's part of the
Lakers haven't Lakers actually talked about now. Who's there yet. The list of people who's there is
I bet
still
Dave
quiet.
Knows that. I could probably text him, but like, I would be really surprised if Mancias isn't there, because Gunnar Peterson is the main trainer, but like Mike Mancias is definitely part of the training staff. And he's there every game. So I would be really surprised if he wasn't there. And that's part of, so like, I'm not discounting Chris's reporting there. I'm just saying,
no, it is the large,
you know,
my large
LeBron already took care of the essentials. Yeah. They're on the staff.
That is incredible. It's a reflection of like who this guy is in terms of how he thinks mm-hmm. this stuff through. But my larger question is just built around special treatment. And like, Yeah, I respect that LeBron is like, I am like you inside this bubble. I'm going to be like you. And I'm not, you know, like we've all made the joke that like LeBron's food is the scene from Goodfellas when they're all in prison and they're sneaking in like the gourmet sausages and the steaks and the meats and they're all cooking inside, you know, like clearly not like every other prisoner. But if like I respect it from LeBron that that's how he's doing. But if LeBron needs special treatment, LeBron should get special treatment. And if I'm a teammate of LeBron's, as long as it's not completely over the top, I want him to get special treatment. And that's fine. He can have things that, you know, that Devontae Kaycock doesn't get. It's okay.
Well, one of the, I mean, look, remember a couple of years ago when I think it was Brian Windhorst had this number out there that LeBron spends potentially $1 million a year taking care of his body. Just on all the people that he has doing different jobs for him in terms of taking care of his body, right? Just trainers, masseuses, the cryo chamber and the home gym, et cetera. Like there's a sense like you spend that money because you need to perform at the level that you have to perform. You just do. And like, I think when you're on a team with a guy like LeBron, like it is important to, like, that's fine. He's your guy. He's the one who makes the engine run. So that's like, I don't think anybody would have a problem with it. I think the part where you get into trouble is when you have...
Do you think his teammates would care?
No, I don't. I don't think his teammates would care. I think they'd say by all means. I think the part where it becomes a problem is when you have like several stars on a team. Let's say you're the Clippers and you have Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. Well, how do you let Paul's guy come with him, but not Kawhi's guy or two? Right, like that's where coaches
it's where coaches and GMs make their money is on stuff like that. Is smoothing out stuff like that. That's their job. That's Doc's job. That's Frank Vogel's job. That's that's Rob's job, and that's what they do. All right, so. I have more questions about the snitch line, which we need to get to. I also have a question about the Lakers in the playoffs. I need you to tell me who the Lakers' third best player is, and does it matter? That's next. Sedano Show, 710 ESPN. Pennzoil synthetic motor oils are made from natural gas. Gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30. Cover all your bases with Straight Talk Wireless. Get the same networks as big carriers. Only pay up to 50% less. Get the unlimited plan with 25 gigs of high-speed data, then 2G for just $45 a month. Only at Walmart. Savings may vary. See terms and conditions at straighttalk.com. So the playoffs are rolling around soon, Ramona, and you know, the Lakers have lost Rajon Rondo. They've lost Avery Bradley. And, you know, those guys matter. It's minutes that have to be sucked up in the backcourt. And all season long, we've had this larger discussion about who the third best player is. Who's the third guy on this team? And some nights it's been Avery Bradley. Occasionally it's been Rondo. But, you know, Bradley's been part of that conversation. And occasionally it's been Kuz, and occasionally it's been Dwight Howard, and whatever it might be, KCP sometimes. When you get into the playoffs and what the Lakers are about to get into, does it matter that I can't answer that question as somebody who watched every game they play, you know, sometimes twice and all that stuff, and I don't really know who the third best player on this team is?
Yeah, I think it matters in the sense that, you know, when you get down to it, like teams are going to scheme for shutting down LeBron and Anthony Davis. They just are. And there has to be a player or two that you feel you could rely on to either create offense when they are being schemed against LeBron and AD, or just somebody that can step up those moments. And I don't know who would you say right now. I would say it should be Kuz, but I don't know if it is. No,
well, yeah, we've talked all year that it should be Kuz, and it is clear the answer is not Kuz. Occasionally it is, game to game, sometimes it is. But the guy, what's the stat? You know, there are seven players in the NBA who have taken more than 200 three-pointers and are shooting under 30% from three. He's one of them. His overall shooting percentage is down in the low 40s. And I'm not saying, like, I don't expect him to be averaging – 19 or 20 points a game on a team with LeBron James and Anthony Davis, the opportunities aren't necessarily there. But it is not unfair to Kuz to say that his performance over the course of the year has been uneven and hasn't been what people hoped it would be at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, and just having covered the last 5 or 6 finals pretty closely, like the teams that win have pretty set pecking order, right? It's in with the Warriors it was Steph Curry, and then when Kevin Durant joined the team it was Durant and then Steph Curry and then Clay and Draymond, and it was like you could debate whether Draymond was more important than Andre Iguodala, but there really wasn't much debate about the top 2 or 3 guys. Like, you just knew that if Steph was having a bad night, Kevin Durant would step up. Or if Durant was having a bad night, Clay would have a big game. Like, you just need 3 or 4 guys that you know are going to be your guys. And that, from one game to the next, like, you count on them to deliver and step up when the other ones aren't.
Right.
And I don't know who that is for the Lakers. Like,
if you have to pick a player who's been their third best player over the course of the season, you got to rank them somehow. Ooh. Like, who would you say has been consistently the third best player?
Wow.
Probably, because Dwight? Is it Dwight?
No.
It's Dwight, or it might be KCP.
I would say KCP, actually. I think he's had a pretty good year, and he's both sides of the ball,
Yeah.
If we're taking into consideration that, too. KCP's had a pretty good year. I mean, the last two big games that the Lakers won, which feels like a million years ago, but let's go back to them, right? With the
back
Bucks
in the aughts.
And sure. The Clippers. Yeah. Avery Bradley had a big game, right? It was somebody right. different. And the reason that, that put them over the top against the Clippers was Avery Bradley had, I think, 18 points or something, but it's Danny Green will get hot and have a big game. Or I don't know that you can say it's the same person every time, though. Look, the Raptors won last year with Kawhi Leonard is clearly the best player, and Pascal Siakam, Fred VanVleet, Kyle Lowry, all those were complementary players to Kawhi. But I still think you could say those were the top 4 guys. Like, you could still say
right.
like,
and
it was like, Kawhi they're and then it was exceptions. Lowry and Siakam.
Right.
Yeah.
There are always exceptions. The Mavs won with Dirk and a collective. Greg, who would you say has been the third best player on the team this year? If you had to pick one guy.
One guy. God, it's so tough. I think Avery Bradley was probably the most consistent when he was in, or Danny Green. But even Danny Green's been kind of up and down.
You could argue that.
Danny's been real up and down.
And yeah, and not quite exactly what I think they hoped. I think they were hoping they were getting a little more of Toronto Danny Green, and they're getting a little bit more of the is he done San Antonio kind of Green. He's been better than that, but not quite what he was last year in Toronto. My concern is what you were saying before, Ramona, is that when it comes to it's fine game to game that KCP is the one who steps up on Tuesday and it's Kuz on Thursday, and then you come to Saturday's game and JaVale mm-hmm. puts up 16 and plays great defense, and you get a couple great games from Danny Green or whatever it might be. But I suspect that in the playoffs, that if the Lakers win a title, we're going to look back on it and say, this guy, whether it's KCP, mm-hmm. whether it's Alex Caruso, whoever it is, this guy was great. Like, he was their third best guy, maybe yeah. not every game, but for 15 of the 20-something games that they play in the playoffs, that was the guy who stepped up as a genuine third option, reliable player. And if they don't get it, I wonder how much that impacts their chances. I think it's actually pretty significant.
Well, I think the issue with Kuz was always, I still don't know if Kuz ever found his role or the role he was comfortable in where he would excel. And some of that I was giving him the benefit of the doubt because he had so many injuries at the beginning and it took a while to get going. And then when he would show flashes of it, I was like, okay, if he does that, that's good. But, a lot of it for Kuz is really just fit alongside of LeBron James. Like, does he, can he adjust his game to play along with LeBron? Like, to be in a role where somebody else is, the primary ball handler, the primary playmaker, you don't have the ball in your hands all the time. And like so many times, Kuz just ends up in this role where he's just kind of standing in the corner waiting to catch a ball and shoot. And like, Kuz is not a catch and shoot player. It's just not his game. And I don't know if he can adjust to that, if they, if it's just a scheme thing, or if it's just a, he's a young player. And so he's, for the first 4 years of his career, he's been doing one thing, and now he's being asked to do something very different and play differently.
Well, I just, I mean, I'll be honest,
different adaptation.
I think we all looked at Kuz's, and I get not quite with the fervency that people call me a Kobe hater, Ramona, but I do get a lot of, you know, Brian hates Kuz, and none of that is true. And I think Kuz is a good player. What I don't think he is the guy who is going to transform into a near star, like an almost all-star. Maybe it's really hard to make all-star teams. I mean, Mike Conley is a great NBA player. He's never made an all-star team. It's really hard. Like, they only started putting Damian Lillard on the all-star team like 2 years ago. So I don't mean like Kuz has got to make four all-star games before he's legit. I just don't think I never have bought into the idea that Kuz is going to be that sort of near all-star, legit third option, or could be the second superstar after LeBron retires, whatever it might be. I think we just decided that he was on that trajectory after his rookie season, but now it's starting to look like the shooting in his rookie season, some of the performance of his rookie season offensively, was the outlier. You go back and you look at his stats at Utah and what he's done in the years since then, and that rookie season looks a lot more like the outlier than the norm. And I just think we decided he was a different and better player than he was. As much as, and the guy works hard, and he understands. You know, he went to Kobe, and he wanted to learn how to, you know, to be great and to do all this stuff. I don't discount that he takes it seriously or wants to be great. It's just I don't think he's that player. And he's how old now? Like 25, something like that?
Yeah.
And it doesn't sound old, but by NBA standards, it kind of is.
Yeah, I think Kuz is what he is, but I also think there's a reason why they don't trade him. And they recognize that if you go and take Kuz out of LA, put him on the Knicks, let's say, put him on a different team where he would be featured and again, like he was with the Lakers before LeBron got there.
As a rookie, right, exactly.
He may look very different. And I think they believe in his potential because he has a poise about him. He has a confidence about him that you don't often see in young players. But he just knows how to score. He knows how to play make. He's got a lot of tricks in the bag. And they don't want to give up on that. It's just a question of, can you find a way to use his skill set playing alongside LeBron and Anthony Davis? And
right.
You know, it's some of that's on him, some of that's on the coaching staff, some of that's on LeBron. But you know, fortunately they've had a lot of time the last 4.5 months to just be breaking down film.
And last season. But you know, it's also you know, playing along LeBron last season. It doesn't matter if Kuz could be a great player, you know, or score more or put up 22 or 23 points a game on another team. All that matters is what he can do on this team and whether or not his skill set matches with this team. That's all that matters.
I think also, too, with Kuz is that he's a guy who I don't know if they've quite figured out his position, right? He probably should be a four man. But on the Lakers, like, they don't really need him at the four. They have, depending on the lineup they're playing, like, he oftentimes gets used as a three, which is not – it's a little uncomfortable,
not,
I think.
It's not what he wants to do, right.
And, you know, when you're playing out of position, when you're playing in a role that is not set up for you to thrive, it's more of a role where this is where you can exist in our team and in our situation. Like, that's a little different, right?
I assume everybody would be better off if they started talking about Kuz in different terms. I think that would help him. I think it would just change the conversation around him. He's a good player. It's not that he's not good or, like, you know, that they should get rid of him. I do think they're going to have a difficult decision to make once it comes time to decide whether or not you really want to pay him. But they don't have to make that decision for a couple of years. So it's okay. Literally, who answers the phone when you call the NBA snitch line?
Yeah.
Who answers it? What does it sound like? Like, is there a phone tree that you go through? Like,
I'd want to disguise my voice.
That's one of my questions. I have a million questions about the NBA snitch line, and I'm going to ask all of them to you, Ramona Shelburne, next. Jordan Rodrigue coming up in about a half hour to talk about the Rams and the NFL. Brian Kamenetsky, Ramona Shelburne, Sedano Show, 710 ESPN.